Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
While he's sulking, he might be standing at second base.
Middays on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight, happy Monday to you. This has been a weird time to remind myself what day it is lately, because the work schedule's been weird. There's a lot of people on vacation.
I spent all of Friday, when we were doing the show, feeling like that was a Monday, despite knowing that I had the next day off. It was a very strange, strange weekend.
Well,
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was all sort of very, very odd. But if you like baseball, you really should listen to The Score over the weekend, when we've got Hit and Run, we've got Inside the Clubhouse. There's so many smart baseball people on these airwaves, one of whom, of course, is Matt Spiegel. And he had an opportunity to talk at length with Steve Stone about, I guess, the nature of modern MLB managing, what constitutes greatness and quality in managers right now, and how that's changing, how teams are adapting, how teams are looking at that, especially with, we don't have to talk around it, with all the attention that was paid last week to parceling out blame for the Cubs' problems, and how much was Joe Maddon responsible, Theo Epstein multiple occasions trying to defuse responsibility, accept blame himself, try to take pressure off of Joe Maddon. But it's still something that is cause for concern, is it not?
Yeah, it is. And regardless of whether or not Theo is effective in allaying some of those concerns or some of that pressure from Joe, the fact remains that this is the last year of his deal. And it is very rare for a manager to be in a situation like Joe is in, to have won a World Series, to have been in the playoffs, to have this kind of unrest around your situation, regardless of the fact that you've had a pretty good ball club, and especially in light of the fact that the ball club you had that's really good has the warts that it does. Warts kind of created by roster construction. So Spiegs and Steve Stone sat down a little bit and spoke to the managerial position, kind of all around baseball. We got the whole context of it, too. So here's Spiegs kind of set up the conversation with Steve here.
Do the best managers have multiple ways of leading and communicating that they can call upon as needed?
Let me float to you an idea that I've been mulling around, and I think that it's going to make sense. I think we're going to see it in the future. It used to be heresy to say you needed two hitting coaches, two pitching coaches. Well, now what you're seeing is you're seeing a regular pitching coach. You're always seeing a pitcher or a catcher in the bullpen who's a de facto pitching coach. So you have a couple of different voices talking to your pitchers. Most teams have at least two hitting coaches. I mean, that's just what happens. Plus, they have your analytics guys and everything that go with it. I think, Matt, we're going to see a time in the not-too-distant future when you're going to see two managers. You know, you've got to take into consideration a lot of things when you're a manager. You have to be a motivator. You have to be a psychologist. You have to be part mechanic. You have to be a father confessor. There are very few guys that have all of those skills. We have seen wonderful motivators in this game. They're great in the clubhouse. They're wonderful managers from 10 o'clock at night to 7 o'clock the next night. Then during the course of a ball game, they are not consistently, but occasionally outmanaged by another really good manager on the other side. So why don't we take the best of a couple of different people and put them together sitting side by side in the dugout? So Joe is a different kind of guy. He's a wonderful motivator. He takes a lot of pressure off his team. But is he the perfect manager? He's a very good manager. There are no perfect managers, but the three that I mentioned, Francona, Bochy, and notably Bob Melvin for a newer generation of players, these guys are exceptional at every aspect of managing. We're going to lose Bochy. I'm not sure how much Terry Francona is going to hang around. Melvin will be here and be terrific. And one of the great managers that's sitting out there for any team that might want him is Joe Girardi, and he's sitting out in North Chicago right now, and he's waiting for the ideal job to come along. I don't know where or when it's going to be, but he's the best man currently not managing. And, you know, unfortunately, I think this game would like to see him back.
Strong stuff from Steve Stone.
Interesting.
Two managers.
What's the first thing that made you think of? Because for me, that goes back to the College of Coaches, all the way back where the Cubs tried this in the, what was it, late 50s, I want to say? I always get the time link. I think it's late 50s.
Yeah, I think what he's also describing is a change in power structure in organizations where, this, if you really want to know how this is all working, go back to when we interviewed Mark Loretta after he was hired. Mm-hmm. Go back to when we talked to Sam Fuld of the Philadelphia Phillies about who works for whom. The divide is gone now. And they may come up with a different term. You may have multiple coaches, and it may not be just one manager in charge of everything, because these lineups are pretty much set by your upper reaches of the organization who have a vision for how they expect their day-to-day lineups to look.
See, I love this idea. I've been an advocate of multiple hitting coaches for quite some time, and if multiple pitching coaches goes along with it, so be it. I don't understand why you wouldn't have an approach like that, given every play. Like, we've seen it a bunch, like in internet memes and whatnot. You put Giancarlo Stanton next to Jose Altuve, or Judge next to Altuve. Like, these men can do the same thing on the baseball field. They look nothing like one another, and the ways that they get themselves to the hitting angle are somewhat different. And despite the not just the physical differences within players, but the mental ones as well, the approach, the culture, all that kind of stuff. Like, why wouldn't you have a plethora? Would you say I have a plethora? Why would you have a plethora?
I'm just a simple man.
Why wouldn't you have a number of guys to talk to the number of guys that you've got? It doesn't, the one voice thing matters less. You may need it at some point, whether that's for disciplinary reasons or what have you, but maybe that one voice, managerial type voice that sets some sort of expectation or whatever can come from a different place.
It's just coming from a level up.
Yeah, and that seems to be fine with me. I don't think that, you know, if the Cubs are set on moving on from, let's just play the hypothetical and say that the Cubs front office has already decided that they are done with Joe Maddon. And it could be that that's the case. It could be that that's where they're leaning. They haven't offered him the contract, so who knows? I don't think that they're ready to move on and break the norm.
No, but
I don't think that they're ready to move on and it, because they want to try something radically different.
But would they double down with a Girardi type who is also older and set in his ways, no matter what lip service he pays to understanding the modern relationship between the bench and the front office,
right,
and the way data is used to envision a team building?
No, I think they would rather, I would guess that they would rather have someone in who, I mean, if they've decided or when they decide to make a change, I think they'd rather have someone there in that position that is willing to branch out to more disparate approaches. Because as you start down that path, you know, you can't do it all at once, you know? It's like making changes in government, man. You can't make all of the change at once. You have to do it bit by bit because there's a lot of people involved and a lot of logistics involved. And you got to keep as many comfortable as you can while you do it. So to me, if an organization wanted to do something like this, and you know, the College of Coaches obviously had its mistakes and issues, but it was rooted in something that is exactly what Steve's talking about now. That's exactly what a lot of pseudo-psychologists or actual psychologists, sports psychologists are thinking about in this game and in sports in general.
Not to mention that no matter what actual job titles you give guys, there have been instances of de facto division of responsibility. For example, one of those names, Bob Melvin. Bob Melvin was the bench coach for Bob Brenly's Arizona Diamondbacks that won the World Series.
Right.
And there's a reason why Bob Melvin continues to manage and Bob Brenly does not. Because most people in baseball knew who the tactician was on that bench. And you've got more influential bench coaches who do a lot of the heavy lifting. You have some guys who don't, some guys who are there to be a good cop, who are there to clap a guy in the back every once in a while, there to steal signs, there to do some of the other things.
Yeah.
But you know, even if you call a guy the bench coach in the manager, there have been, where everybody knows, everybody in baseball knew that Bob Melvin was the brains behind that World Series champion.
You need... That's not to say, though, that Brenly was necessarily worthless.
I didn't say that.
No, and I'm just clarifying the point, because I think it goes, I think that in and of itself, that dynamic can go further. If Melvin is your tactician, Brenly still serves a worthy purpose in either managing some of the personalities in that clubhouse, understanding what guys need to be pushed and which don't, understanding perhaps how to communicate a swing path to a hitter or something a catcher's, you know, not doing correctly or whatnot. It kind of takes more and more you read about this, more and more you read about how front offices in baseball are trying to attack the problem of winning as many of 162 games as you can. There is more of a village approach being tried in this game. Guys understand that they have their own hitting coaches, and then they come to this team, and then they have that hitting coach who melds their approach with the hitting coach they had all season long.
Yeah, what used to be anathema, the idea of going outside baseball, the idea of a
non-affiliated
baseball person, with the rise of places like Driveline and Coach Dave Latta is the other guy that there are. And it's the stigma is gone. The fact that players on their own can chase certain things. And I was reading an article over the weekend with Dylan Cease, and many of the White Sox pitching prospects are reaching out to this Indian meditation guru.
Yeah, the yoga meditation yogi. Dude. Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about coaching.
Fegan wrote about it.
Yeah, they have meditation sessions where they lie together on the grass. I mean,
they just tell each other lies right there on the grass.
I mean, saying that they're like in a circle, lining up their chakras.
Yeah,
and it's all cool, and no one's like, what the hell are these weirdos doing there? That Indian dude got a turban on his head. I mean, everyone's like, yeah, okay, sure,
right? You know? Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's weird and crazy, but that's because I'm not a professional athlete who has to have his brain set in the right direction every single moment of his performance.
I know people who meditate.
I could never do it. I'm terrible.
Every time I say that, people who really believe in it, and it's not a religious thing. It's a mind.
It can be.
I understand. But this is more of a mindfulness thing. The people who practice breathing.
Yeah.
I remember Theo talking about that one time.
Sure.
About the idea of the stress reduction and having some of these practices. And I've had people say you would really get a lot out of it.
If you think it helps, it helps.
It takes a little bit of work, but you'd really get a lot out of it. I don't think I'd be able to. I think I'm my brain is too immature and stupid to be able to handle that kind of thing.
I don't need to be alone with myself. I'm good. Right. Yeah. I don't need to be alone with the thoughts that ricochet around my brain.
Yeah,
I don't want that.
Too.
I do all of this other stuff, so I don't have to pay attention to those stray thoughts bouncing left and right.
This segment's brought to you by International Champions Cup. Welcome to the kits and the chants, the roars and the rants. Welcome to the International Champions Cup, where on July 16th at SeatGeek Stadium, ACF Fiorentina battles Chivas de Guadalajara right in our backyard.
Mm-hmm. This text from the 312, I do not want to see Don Cooper in yoga clothes.
Grab tickets at Ticketmaster.com today. Yeah, I don't know that Coop's going to be in on that whole thing.
Maybe.
I would like to see him in a turban.
Maybe. Yeah, I think he could get into it if he really wanted to. It just, he'd be the, you know how they have beer yoga? You do yoga with a beer in hand?
Yeah.
He'd do plate of food yoga. It'd be like eggs and bacon and some sort of like flying wasp pose or whatever.
No.
You know, that'd be cool.
Beef stroganoff yoga with Don Cooper.
That was my favorite. When we had Sox games, the thing that I always liked, the game I like playing with Ranji, is what soup is Coop eating while talking with Ranji?
It's probably soup that had been left there and half eaten by someone else.
Literally had eggs fall onto my recorder while talking to the
Or band. It's like the Jay Zawoski donut philosophy. You have half a bowl of soup and you leave it, and then you come back later. Oh, look, it's half a bowl of soup.
It's only half.
Right, it's only half. Well, the story was that Ranji was interviewing Coop at Sox Fest, and people had left the room, and the room was empty, and there were still plates of cookies with bites out of them. And Coop sort of idly, absentmindedly, just sort of began eating all of these cookies that were left by randos.
I get that. Same. I absolutely get that. I've been there. I've done that. Get Coop there. Ryan Dempster called the Cubs Sox game with Len Casper just yesterday. Did a good job on the broadcast. Always good talking baseball with Dempster. All-Star breaks coming up, and of course he's got an event coming up we can tell you about as well. Raises a bunch of money for charity. Good chance to talk some baseball with Ryan Dempster next. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
You got to fight all the way through it, and you know that's the grind of a season. You're going to have moments where you're feeling aches and pains and bruises, and you have to be honest with your manager and let your manager know when you might need a day. And he does a good job of protecting these players and making sure that they are physically fit and ready to go the whole season. And I think that's a really tough task in today's game, where you're traveling so much, you're going city to city, late night flights, different hotel rooms, different beds. It's a hard thing to manage, and I think open dialogue, being honest with each other, having that open door policy is vital to keeping a player healthy over the course of 162, and really looking at the course of the whole totality of it, the marathon and not just the sprint.
That's Ryan Dempster. You heard him analyzing the Cubs game on the television broadcast, sitting next to Len Casper, and you can find him on Twitter at Dempster46. He joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. You got quite the life, man. You got this thing all figured out. You kind of won the whole baseball thing. You had the long career, starter, reliever, and now what? MLB Network, occasional Cubs broadcast, probably doing stuff with a new marquee network, and you've got your own little traveling circus show coming up with the off-the-mound stuff.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm definitely having fun, and I love the game of baseball. I always have, and really enjoy talking about it, and really looking forward to the upcoming Off the Mound show, July 20th at the Park West. So we're really excited for this, and just having a blast. I mean, enjoy talking with you guys too. Always great being on with you.
What goes into the prep work for doing a game alongside Len Casper? Because I've seen Len set himself up to go to a game. The prep he does it's incredible. Not that other play-by-play guys don't go through a whole lot of that, but Len's really something else. How have you changed? Because, I mean, a lot of players could just go in and rely on their knowledge of, game-to-game strategy in some players and just do the thing. What do you like for prep?
I think, a couple things that I like. I like to know what a player's done or been doing over the last, 15 games, over the last 7 games. Because sometimes, when we look at stats or we're talking about numbers over the course of the whole season, that's great, but you're talking about the now and in the moment, and so it's a lot more relevant as to what a guy's doing over the current week or in that month particularly, and just kind of having that, and then you go around and you talk to people and you get a feel for kind of maybe how somebody's doing or what they've seen out of a certain position, or maybe a player making an adjustment, and then just using your knowledge as well. And hey, listen, I follow baseball religiously. I have the app on my phone, on my iPad. I'm constantly watching games on TV. So I'm pretty up to date with most things that are going on. I have to be because of my job, but I also, it's just how I've been since I was a kid, and it hasn't changed much. So I like to kind of be informed. And you're right, Len is unbelievable. He does an amazing job. He's got so much. So if you're missing something or you're thinking, oh man, if I'm going to talk about this, I can just look at him. I looked at him yesterday on a couple things, and he's like right there, boom, that's what you need. He's incredibly prepared, and it shows through his work.
Why are the Cubs the only team that can't solve Ivan Nova?
I said, I'm telling you, this was the craziest 4-game series. 2 losses of 3-1, both Ivan Nova starting, both 2-run home runs by Eloy Jimenez, and then the Cubs won the other 2, 7-3 and 6-3. And they roughed up Lucas Giolito, who really wasn't roughed up. He just walked too many guys. So it was kind of like they both series, mirrored each other, the 2-game series, one in Wrigley and one down there. And I don't know. He's had some success against them in the past, too. And, when you watch yesterday's game, it's hard to say that he dominated them. I mean, from the very first hitter of the game with a great catch by Tilson at center field and a couple line drive outs at some guys, some other hard hit balls to the warning track or to the outfield. But that's part of the game, and that's his MO. It has been ever since really he's been in the big leagues. He's a strike thrower. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys. He lets you put the ball in play and lets his defense take care of the work. And yesterday they did a good job of that.
Talking with MLB Network's Ryan Dempster here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You mentioned Eloy Jimenez. I have watched his minor league career with a whole bunch of interest. Of course, everybody has. He hit for a high average down there. His slash line now, though, looks like the classic swing and miss, just power guy. And it's got, believe it or not, it has some Sox fans worried about what the future is for him as a complete hitter. Where do you think the ceiling of his abilities really are?
Oh, no, I think he's an all-star waiting to happen. I mean, you see the talent that this guy has, and like, that's the reality of going from the minor leagues to the big leagues. It's like college to pro football. Now all of a sudden you're playing against all the best players. Like, there's great players in AAA getting a chance and an opportunity at the big leagues eventually, and there's also players that will be in AAA and never make it to the big leagues because they're not quite good enough. And you'll have guys that are in AAA for a year that these prospects feast on. So it's just a matter of that you get to the big leagues and everybody's better and consistently better. So you're not facing very many guys that you're pretty much guaranteed you're going to hit the ball hard off of. And they make adjustments really fast. There's scouts that are in the stands. There's advanced meetings that go on before every series. If you have a hole or a weakness going on, find it within days and they'll start picking it apart. And so that's your job as a player to make those adjustments to what they're doing. Look at Yoan Moncada for the White Sox. Here's a guy, big swing and miss last year, big touted prospect. Oh, will he pan out? He could have been an all-star this year with the type of numbers he was putting up. So it's just a matter of time and patience, and it's the hardest thing to have when we're in the big leagues is patience because we want results right now. But they're starting to get their results. They're two games under 500. They're starting to play really good baseball, and you can see why they're going to be exciting in the future. And this kid right here has as much power as anybody, and he can hit the ball at any ballpark, and that average will start to figure out its own way, and he'll just get better and better.
If you're pitching against Robel Garcia, why would you ever throw him a fastball?
Well, I mean, you got to throw a fastball no matter who you are facing in the big leagues. If you want to be successful in the big leagues, you got to be able to throw a fastball on a fastball count. Now you just have to just make better location. Like yesterday, you know, you get behind 2-0. It doesn't matter if you're throwing 97 miles an hour. You know, 2-0, belt high down the middle, it's going to get hit. You locate that better and you're going to get out. So, but this kid's, you know, burst on the scene out of nowhere, and it's exciting. And it's exciting for players in the minor leagues to understand, like, sometimes when you look at a roster and a big league roster and you're a young kid, you're like, man, you got Chris Bryant at third and Javi Baez at short, you know, Addison Russell or Descalso at second or David Bodie's at third and Rizzo. I'm never going to get to the big leagues. Hey, it takes one opportunity. It takes somebody being hurt. It takes somebody not performing. And all of a sudden you're playing well in the minor leagues and now you get a shot and you make the most of that shot. Things like this happen. So, but he's really burst on. He's built like a linebacker, and he's got massive power. So this is it's cool to see the opportunity arise and somebody take advantage of it.
How would you, Ryan Dempster, go about balancing, and maybe balancing is a leading term, so you tell me if you don't think that's a fair thing, but how would you go about balancing this Cubs lineup one through nine, because they use that extra guy?
Yeah. I like the lineup. I like the way it's constructed, you know, with I think Kyle is not your prototypical leadoff guy, but at the same time, he can be an on-base guy. Provide some pop early in the game, and when that lineup goes over, he could be a guy that, you know, can hit that three-run homer. He has to figure out how to do that. But then you start going down it with the Baez and Bryant and Rizzo and Wilson, and it's constructed really well. And, you know, the days of the righty-lefty, you know, righty-lefty stuff, yeah, they work, but at the same time, later in the game, managers just match that up back and forth, and it doesn't really come into play as much as it used to, but I think they're extremely deep, and I think this break will help them a lot, and you'll see them come out in the second half swinging the bats really well.
What's the best way to make sure the break does help them a lot? Is it mental rest? Is it physical rest? If you had to recommend a plan to get the most out of not having to play, what's the way a veteran pro would do that?
Yeah, I think the mental rest right now is huge. The physical rest, if you're ailing or if you got something, yeah, it's great to just relax for a couple days, you know, stay here in Chicago, go out on a boat and sit in the play yard, just work on your tan and just chill out. But the mental break, these guys have been playing year after year, which is great, which is awesome and what you want, but the World Series and then everything that came with that, and then to get back to the NLCS, and then, you know, last year to end the way it did, nobody was happy with, but it's a mental grind. You're playing more games than everybody else, and you play game after game after game, day after day in different cities, and you're always, you know, not really getting a day off at any point. And, like, just think about it. Okay, take baseball aside, just life. Anybody who worked at any job and you worked 25 straight days in a row, mentally you're just going to be a little bit fried. You're just going to be like, man, I just need a day off to just, like, go for a walk and have a coffee, whatever it is. And so I know they're athletes. They're, you know, they're paid well, but at the same time, they're human beings. And just from a purely mental standpoint, I think it's so beneficial, and especially a team that's played as many, if not more, games than anybody across baseball over the past few years.
See, that's why I ask, because it's easy to sort of say, yeah, get a mental break. But I wonder if there's actually a recommended way to do that. You say, take a walk, have a coffee. For some guy, it might be you go fishing and you sit in the middle of a lake for a while. For somebody else, it could be read a book. And we were just talking about the story earlier, what so many of the young White Sox pitchers are doing literally with meditation, with all sorts of this Maharishi that is teaching a certain kind of meditation. And nobody in pro sports makes fun of that anymore. Like, hey, yeah, you know, whatever it takes, whatever you need to do, whatever you can do to get to that place.
Oh, 100%. Well, like, just life in general. You used to go to a psychiatrist. Everybody thought you were nuts. You know, that's why you went. And now people go there preventatively. Big companies hire, you know, people to talk to their employees to be able to just clear their mental space. If they got problems at home, if they got problems, you know, they're missing somebody, or, you know, they're just struggling with a certain issue at their job, or they're trying to figure out, man, I can't get this hitter out. What do I need to do? And the mental aspect is so huge. Everybody has physical talents. Everybody, you know, there's guys in the minor leagues that throw harder than the guys in the big leagues. There's guys in the minor leagues that can hit the ball farther, but mentally is the difference. That's where you make that separation, is how you handle those things. And then handling those things on a regular basis, it becomes grinding. It becomes very tough. So how do you clear your mental space? I'm a huge believer in meditation, you know, things like yoga, things where you can get out of your own mental way just for a little bit, so that you, now when you're asked to focus and do that, and you're out on the mound, and it's the fourth inning, and you got runners on first and second, that you're sitting there thinking about the pitch you got to not now execute, rather than thinking about if you put the trash out that day because you didn't have mental space for that. You know, and I think it's super important, and teams have really embraced that, not just in baseball, but across all sports, professionally and amateurly, and it's really, really a big change, and a change that was needed, and it's awesome to see.
Ryan, real quickly here before we let you go, I know you were working yesterday, but the Indians beat the Reds 11-1, and the Reds, while they were playing, weren't wearing sleeves. They did the whole throwback sleeveless jersey thing. Have you seen this? And can you would you have been on board with a jersey like this while you were playing? And would you have pitched sleeveless?
I saw it. I get the throwback. There was a Greg Luzinski. He went totally sleeveless.
Ted Kluszewski.
Ted
Kluszewski.
Yeah, Ted Kluszewski. He wore that. I probably had maybe a 2-year stretch in my career where I had the arms that could fill that out. So maybe I would have been all for it. Work on my farmer's tan just a little bit. Pitching it, I don't know. That would have been a tough one. That's just a different element. I actually like throwing in sleeves, so I don't know, like full sleeves all the way down. I don't know if I could have pulled that off. Yasiel Puig, he could pull that off. He kind of looked like the Incredible Hulk a little bit. So it was a good look. And I get what they're trying to do. Hey, listen, every team has their own way of creating team camaraderie and bringing each other together, and they're trying to do that there. And in today's game, with the way things are and the way we let the kids play, let him have fun with it. Go ahead.
Lastly, Jake Mariznick decided that he was in a split second going to endanger the life of Jonathan Lucroy, who was blocking home plate. Looked like a dirty play, and we're going to find out if he is going to get suspended or not. First time you saw it, what was your first thought?
Whoa. Like, that's a lot right there. Like, you know, just the impact, the head-to-head collision. Jonathan Lucroy is one of the toughest guys in the league. He doesn't, you know, I watch him take foul ball after foul ball, and he just reaches back and says to the umpire, give me another ball. It could hit right off his forearm, and he doesn't flinch. So I knew he was in trouble. And, you know, just to talk about whether or not it was a dirty play, a couple things come to mind. One, first of all, his reaction right away led me to think it's not a dirty play. Like, if I'm really trying to clean your clock at home plate and run you over, I'm not worried right away to see if you're okay. And his reaction was right away. And then when you watch the replay, first of all, you're talking, we watch it in slow motion, so we're like, this is a dirty play. That was in full speed. He's trying to figure out, how do I get to home plate? And the guy is on the line, and you actually see him try to make a play to the inside part of the bag. And I truly believe he was trying to slide headfirst to the inside part of the bag, and Luke Kuechly came back at that moment. It just turned into a collision. And I know from, you know, talking to people, I know from doing interviews with Jake Marisnyk that this is a good kid who's not out to try and hurt anybody. And, you know, I just think it was one of those rare moments, an unfortunate moment that we have the luxury of watching in slow motion, instant replay with no emotion at all. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is it was happening in real time, you know, bang, bang in a 10-10 game, just trying to figure out how to get the win. And it turned into a really, really kind of horrific scene to watch. And unfortunately for Jonathan Lucoy, it might kind of end his season.
Ryan, thanks much for joining us once again. And where should people go for tickets if they want to be part of the next Off the Mound?
Yeah, it's you can go to offthemound.com or SpecialOlympicsIllinois.com, which is SOILL.com. You can get them at the Park West box office as well. And it's going to be a really fun night. We got a great list of guests. Go to offthemound.com, check it all out. Tickets are still available. They're going fast. So we're really looking forward to raising money for the Special Olympics in Illinois and having a blast and laughing a ton here on July 20th.
Ryan Dempster, thanks as always.
Thanks, guys.
And the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season and single-game tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Midday Midway is coming up. I've got a rooster on trial and bourbon-marinated fish.
Ooh, I've got a product for you if you're into coffee and booze and a World Series of Poker issue that should never, ever have been shown. Lots to do today. We haven't even gotten to the Kawhi stuff yet. We're going to talk a little basketball soon, and you've got a chance to win Cubs tickets coming up. But the Midday Midway is next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This segment's brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800 The Door. And the Midday Midway is sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouth-watering water. We did plenty of baseball talk. We heard Steve Stone on managers. We followed an epic Cubs-Sox fight with a couple of women just dealing out whoop-ass on everything that surrounded them. It took 8 or 9 security personnel to just get them in cuffs, and apparently they were not arrested, though they were tossed from the park. And Ryan Dempster talked about those games, too. We broke down a little bit of Robel Garcia, what he is and what he probably is unlikely to be.
So our first story comes to us from the World Series of Poker, the WSOP, the WSO, well, something other than that as we get to the story. There was some wild action, TotalProSports.com, some wild action at the World Series of Poker on Friday. One individual was disqualified from the event when he went all in. Then proceeded to throw his shoe at the dealer, pull down his pants, and expose himself for all to see. There's video of it. It is graphic. It's all there, and it happens. Didn't expect to see it, but he wasn't done there. Not only did he throw his shoe and drop trow, he then ran into the main casino. So he's off in the side area where the World Series of
the
poker
Rio?
Is happening. Yeah, at the Rio. And he makes his way to the main casino, climbs up onto the craps table, and pulls his pants down one more time.
Hmm.
I thought, you tell me if I missed the conception here. I thought that in order to participate in the World Series of Poker, you did have to be at least somewhat sober. Like, this is a bracelet event. This is something that you're...
Right.
There's money on this. How is this man? Who is this man? Whose man's is this?
and it's a $10,000 entry.
Yeah, this isn't small chips or anything. This is the big table.
I just kind of, so to speak, the evening got away from him a little bit. Meet Maurice. Maurice is a rooster, and he's on trial in Western France in an unusual case that has come to symbolize the divide between urban and rural communities. Maurice is the defendant in a court battle stemming from a long-running neighborhood dispute over his early morning crowing.
Uh-huh.
His owner, Corinne Fesseau, told CNN that neighbors in the village of Saint-Pierre-d'Oléron on the Isle of Oléron first complained in April 2017, asking her to keep Maurice quiet. She said, "I've lived here for 35 years. It's never bothered anyone. But neighbors are accusing Maurice of causing noise pollution." And the case was heard by the court in Rochefort. And after the trial, Fesseau told CNN she's pleased with the development. She's hopeful a situation can be found. And this is igniting debate in France because the neighbors in question are city dwellers who only visit there a few times per year. So their attitude towards the rooster, which is one of the national symbols of the country, has been perceived as indicative of the polarization between urban and rural France. Fesseau said the countryside is still the countryside. We must tolerate the crows of the rooster. Her struggle has received significant support. 120,000 people signed her online petition to save Maurice. And she said people came to the court with other roosters in a show of support. And she said the problem is we no longer tolerate each other. The traditional sounds of the countryside should be protected. And they're not. And Maurice is not in danger of being euthanized or eaten or anything like that. He would simply be removed. The safety of the rooster is not an issue. But, you know, people are there summering or they're vacationing and they're woken up at sunrise. But that's what roosters do.
I'm Team Maurice here. He's playing a home game. You're coming out from the city to go visit. Like, this is Maurice's domain.
I'm with you, and as somebody coming off a rough night's sleep, I'm thinking just as I felt I was about to fall back asleep, the sun rose above the horizon, and it wasn't a rooster, but we've got a couple songbirds.
I
can't tell exactly what they are. I know it's not a cardinal. I know it's not a chickadee. It's probably a robin, but they're... Oh, boy, right by the window, and where's the Cooper's Hawk when I need it? The one that was grabbing Blue Jays at the Botanical Gardens. I would like to enlist a personal Cooper's Hawk to come by and grab whatever's making that noise.
New product out there for those of you who are enthusiasts of some, like, craft drinks and or coffee, or both.
You are.
I am both, actually. You'll remember... that in this segment, a little while ago, a couple of months ago, we mentioned that PBR is working on a whiskey, Pabst Blue Ribbon, working on a whiskey. The news now is that they're working on a coffee drink. As of July 1st, PBR's latest foray is a hard coffee. It's not diving into the hard seltzer market like loads of other breweries or even looking to make hard soda or their fad drinks on life support, so says Thrillist.com. Hard coffee. And yes, it does contain caffeine. The announcement comes, PBR says they've always been a brand that pushes boundaries and celebrates those who experiment and try new things. Hard coffee is an opportunity for us to pioneer a delicious and fun new drink and give America something unique. It's going to be a 5% drink. It's going to be tested in 5 states to start. We are not one of the lucky 5. Pennsylvania, Maine, New Jersey, Florida, and Georgia. You can track down a 4-pack using a store locator site, which maybe I'll tweet out. I don't know. But what I can't find out, tell me what you expect here. I can't determine whether this drink is a bubbly one or not, whether it's got carbonation in it or not. I can't tell. I would assume that it does.
Why?
Well, because I think that's an easier way to keep... I would imagine the coffee drink itself probably has some sort of dairy product or dairy-like product in it, which would, to me...
Like a Frappuccino kind of thing?
Something like that. I would imagine it's got to be somewhat bubbly. And given the marketplace, I mean, even though they're saying, well, we're not getting into the hard seltzers or anything like that... I think in order to sell it, you'd want it, you know, bubbly because that seems to sell.
Either way, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm not really that interested in this one either. Although, I give them points for trying.
How about bourbon marinated fish?
Yeah, sold.
Really?
Probably, yeah.
Well, the Kentucky River is brimming with dead fish as the fallout continues from a fire at a Jim Beam bourbon warehouse.
Oh, smelly.
The warehouse in Versailles, Kentucky, caught fire Tuesday night with 45,000 barrels of whiskey inside, according to Beam's parent company, Beam Suntory. The fire's out. The cause has not been determined. But WKYT television showed dead fish floating down the river and piling up along its banks as officials monitored the scene and kept up efforts to minimize the environmental impact. A containment system was set up at the warehouse to help prevent runoff from polluting waterways and nearby drinking water sources. Well, people are all up for that. But a spokesman for the Kentucky Energy and Environment Cabinet said that aeration devices had been installed in the Kentucky River to reduce the number of dying fish, but there will be more dead and dying fish as runoff from the distillery flows into the Kentucky River. So far, the alcohol plume on the Kentucky River is 23 miles long.
Whoa.
They do, this is 45,000 barrels. 45,000 barrels.
Whoa.
There was a fire official who said this fire was raging out of control, but he said it's the best damn smelling fire I've ever been to
in
my life. So they do think it's going to dissipate as it enters the larger body of water. But there still could be some impact to aquatic life immediately where the two rivers meet. And this is, it sounds like, it's pretty serious stuff. They're not saying what kind of fish. I don't know if these are game fish or non-sports fish that are dying, but this is, it's never a good thing.
Are they rendered inedible then? I mean, by the death they're kind of going through? Like, this is a done deal for these fish, right?
I don't think they're necessarily rendered. They probably wouldn't taste very good, would be my point. I don't think that bourbon marinated fish, depending on the species, would actually be appetizing.
I give it a shot. I eat worse. That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Our long, interminable wait for Kawhi Leonard to sign somewhere has come to an end. And really, it didn't take that long. It was just 5 days, though it felt like forever. What it means for the Bulls is another interesting piece, because something happened with the Kawhi deal. Paul George heading west is not something many saw, and it may, just may, have effects for the Chicago Bulls. We'll get into that next. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.